Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. You can find more podcasts like this by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts or subscribe to our iTunes feed by searching for EDUCAUSE. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference presented by and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference presented by Wani Harnides, Director of Research and Academic Computing at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. The session is entitled Developing Low-Cost Applications Using Offshore Companies.
So off-the-shelf application, what's already out there, what can I use, what can be customized for the graduate program? And at the time, I didn't find anything that would satisfy the needs that the dean was asking, all the things that the dean was asking for. It's very unique. It was a very unique program. There was nothing out there that could really do it off the shelf. And anything that I looked at that we needed to customize, we needed to spend lots of money for. So what we did next was to look at internal development. Can our internal developers develop this application in the time frame that we have? And at the time, because of the projects that we had, because of the expertise that we had, and because of the short time frame, that answer was no. We couldn't really do it in-house. We had to outsource it. So we went through a whole vendor selection process like you all do with RFPs and looking at the different vendors available and what they can produce for us and doing all the vetting and all the things related to that. When we started to look at vendors, our criteria was that we needed low cost. There was a fixed budget that we needed to deal with for the graduate school. It needed to be a U.S.-based company. And the reason why I was looking for a U.S.-based company was that we didn't have a good, we needed to do business analysis. What was this graduate school application going to look like? It was all in the dean's head what this whole thing was going to look like. Well, how do we take it from the dean's head, put it on paper, make it look right, and all of those things? So I needed to have robust business analysts to look at all that information and get that information out. And I don't have business developers within my organization. I have developers, but not business analysts. So we also needed to do fixed price. We knew what our budget was. We couldn't go beyond that budget. There was no money going to come. So I needed somebody that would give me a fixed price for the entire project. And like I said, I needed somebody to do business analysis. And our dean was very, very precise as to what he wanted. So how were we going to get that from his head and into the application? And we also, one of the things that was a key requirement was that I needed to maintain this application going forward. So we were going to have an outsource it to a development company, but I needed to go ahead and support it. So they needed to use things that I had expertise in, and that was where Microsoft shopped. So it needed to be .NET, it needed to be SQL on the back end, it needed to be web-based. 50% of my faculty and users are Mac users. So it needed to support the Mac browsers and all of them. So that's what the criteria was. When we started getting back the information, the proposals from the vendors, and we looked at it, what really came to us was that price was going to be a key determining factor. The prices were very different. We didn't get all the prices just about the same. We got ranges of prices. And the difference in the price, what made the difference in the cost of developing the application was whether we were using onshore developers or offshore developers. And basically, the scale was tipped because the using onshore developers, U.S.-based developers, this is New York City pricing. I don't know if it's the same around the country, but it was going to cost about from $80 to $120 per hour for development. And if we went offshore, it was going to cost between $30 and $35. We actually paid $30. Right now it's $35. So The only way to go for us at the time was with this company that offered the offshore development. And we had a few companies. It wasn't just one. We looked at three different vendors that had the offshore option. The company that we selected is called EPAM. They have been in business for 15 years. They're based out of New Jersey, so that satisfied our need for U.S.-based company. They have development centers in Eastern Europe and Russia. And they have all the correct certifications, all of those things that are important. They had a solid methodology. We went through their process. We reviewed their process. We talked to their clients to see how is it that they develop the applications, how do we keep on top of the application as it's being developed. So we verified that all that was solid and available. And one of the key components was that they were going to have onshore and offshore personnel. So we had the onshore personnel for doing the business analysis, for doing project management, for doing all of the things that we needed, FaceTime, and they have the offshore for the core development work that needed to be done. And that was what drove the price. They had the expertise in the .NET framework, and they were willing to give us a fixed price project. They had both fixed price and times and material. So that was very important to us. There were so many companies that would not give us a fixed price. The EPAM development centers are all over, as I said, Eastern Europe and Russia. And these are some of the places. Some of the places I have never heard of. I am not sure exactly where they are. If you see the one with the asterisk, that's Saratov, and that's where our developers are from. That's where our code is all being developed. Just in case you don't know where Saratov is, it's one of the major cities in southern Russia. And it's the reason why these development firms go to specific areas is because of the type of talent that's available in that area. So this is a very rich scientific and technical area with many colleges and universities. So that's why they have the resources, they have the manpower, that's why they build the center in that particular portion of the country. So we started working with EPAM. And since then, we've been very satisfied, and I'll tell you more about how we got there and all of that, but we've been very satisfied with their work. And to date, we have three projects that we have worked on with them. The first one was the student management system and the student information system for the graduate school that I mentioned. The second one was a laboratory management system for our monoclonal antibody core facility. And that was last year. We completed it this year, about 3 months ago, and it's now in production. And we are in the process of developing an application called Grant Central, and this is for the Office of Sponsored Projects. They want to be able to manage all the grants, all the fund, all the proposals that are being sent out, and things of that sort. So we are building that with EPAM as well. And I'll talk in more detail about each of these. So going into the student information system, we use EPAM to fully develop the application from beginning to end, from business analysis through all the various steps. They gave us a fixed price, but they wouldn't give us a fixed price at the very beginning. They had not done the business analysis, so they were afraid that if they gave us a price, they were going to be on the hook for something that they weren't quite sure of the scope and all the details. So what we did with them is that we did a time and materials piece, which was the business analysis. So we contracted with them. They came in. They sent all their folks. This was all done onshore by coming to our institution. They did the business analysis. And then after they completed the business analysis, they gave us a fixed price for the rest of the project. We created storyboards. Development, they did the development offshore. We do the testing in QA in a combination of offshore and onshore. and the project management was done onshore. We had a project manager from my side. One of my staff members is a project manager, and they have a project manager on their side as well. And I recommend people use this type of giving the full development process to outsource the entire thing. If you're working with a large project, you don't have the resources, you don't have the expertise, and you have a hard deadline that you want to meet. This is hard to see because of the resolution of the image, but this is, I'm just giving you a flavor of what they created for us. This is, the entire graduate school is paperless. So from the beginning of the process, from the application process to the review process, interviews, et cetera, the whole entire process is paperless. And everything is online. It is all web-based. And we have all the modules, the student module, the faculty module, the alumni module, all of the modules to go through the entire life cycle of a student in the school. The things that we don't have the typical undergraduate pieces, which is the financing and bursar's office and all of that. We don't have that as part of this. And this is just the third page of the application. So this is the part of the application process that the students complete online. And this is the third page where they put their GRE scores and they put all their information about themselves. This is another piece of the application. This is part of the admissions. This is once a student has submitted the application, this is what a faculty member would go through to see, to look at a student. So you're going to review an applicant. You can see all the supporting documents. You can see the student's credentials, their interests, their recommendation letters, all their scores, and all. So this is what the faculty member that's going to review the student will go in to see. This is the lab rotation. So students, once they're in their second year and moving forward, they go through lab rotations. And this is when they're assigned to a lab, they have a mentor in the lab, and there's feedback that goes back and forth from the student regarding the lab rotation and also from the faculty member that they're working with. So this is all part of that. If you look across on the left, that column, you have all the advisors, the courses, the research that they're working on and for the student. This is the mail notification. The dean was although the entire system is automated, all the email notifications, the acceptance letter, the rejection letter, everything goes through the system and is automated. The dean and the assistant dean were afraid that rejection letters, because this was the first time, it was a year, we had just finished developing the application, they were afraid that rejection letters or admissions letters would go out without, you know, the system would somehow go crazy and start sending out the wrong letters to the wrong people. So what they wanted to do was they wanted to have an approval process. The system automatically generates the email, but they wanted a human being to go in and say, yes, go ahead and send it out. Yes, go ahead. And this is what this is right now. So there's total control of the system. This is what we paid, or this is a comparison of what the application cost to develop. And the total savings should have come at the end, but that's okay. So this is onshore versus, when we build the application offshore, this is how much it cost us. Our in-house cost I calculated as $60,000. This is my staff that worked part of the time on the project. And it was basically $60,000 for that year duration and the time that they spent on it, the percentage of the time. The onshore business analysis that I was telling you about that we did cost exactly $47,000. That's how much we paid for them to come in and work with us. And the last piece is the bulk of the work was the development effort, and that was $205,000 based on $30 an hour. So the entire project cost us $312,000. Okay? It was not cheap, but it had exactly what the vision of the dean was translated into the application. And this is what I estimated would it cost. And all I did, everything is the same except that I changed the number of hours and I multiplied it times 100 as opposed to 230. And so the total cost, if we had built it on shore, would have been about $800,000. And that's what I calculate the savings to be. By the way, this is not what the entire application cost us. The application is still changing and developing and being maintained. So we do still work with EPAM, and they still are working on pieces of the application because there's been changes throughout for the last couple of years. So it's not that we gave them a $312,000 check and that was the end of it. It actually cost more than that, but that was the portion that I was that I concentrated on. That was developing the first six modules of this. The second application that we build with EPAM, and the reason that we continue going to EPAM is because I have, like I said, I have three developers. The developers have a full queue all the time. I get somebody like these folks coming and saying, hey, you know, can you build a LIM system for me? I need it customized. I need it to do this, that, and the other. And I said, okay, I really don't have the bandwidth. Or I have one person that I can provide, but it's going to take a year and a half to complete the whole thing, whatever. But when they say, we're really disappointed, we really want it, I said, but we have a different option. I can give you another option, and that is if you have some money, I will manage the project, I will work with the developer, and I will help you get that that application completed by using this company. And a lot of times, if they have the money, they will go ahead with it. So that's what we did with this one. This one was actually a co-development effort. I had a developer, Da is his name, and he worked on the application. But the application was going to take quite a while, and it was taking a long time to complete it, all of that. So we needed to do some sort of like staff augmentation. I just wanted to get the application off and going. So how are we going to do that? And one way that we could do it was to kind of split the application and give part of it to the development company, and they could do all of that offshore. So this was a co-development effort. We created the database. We created the administrative module, which was the bulk of it. And the user module, we said, hey, you know, why don't we give this to EPAM? They can do this very quickly. They can turn it around. We give them the copy of the database. We give them the look and feel. We give them all of that, and they can turn it around, and they did. We did the testing and QA jointly, and the support, the ongoing support for the application is just ours. So they completed this. They completed their portion. We brought it in. We did the testing, and from a user perspective, it's seamless as to who developed it. This was a time and materials. We decided to go in a time and material with a cap. So it was not to exceed this amount. The reason I did it this way was that I knew what the cap was, but the quote that I was getting for a fixed price I thought was too high. And that's because the company didn't want to take on the risk. They weren't sure what they were taking on. Since it was our database, since we had already started the development, they said, we don't want to take that risk. I was ready to take the risk and go in time and material because I knew it was going to cost us less because I knew that we had good code already. We had a good database. We had a solid foundation of what we needed. So it turned out very well. And I put the cap on so that the salesperson, the project manager on the EPAM side could be really looking out for it. If we're getting anywhere near that, if we're going to hit that anywhere, let me know because I'm going to pull the plug on that project because that's all the money I have. And again, this is something that can be easily done. If you want to start out with something and you don't want to risk giving the entire development of the application to an outsourced company and especially offshore, you may want to start with something like this, a co-development, and see how that works out. This is some screenshots of the of that application.
The administrative module has that orangey top color. The user module, which was what they developed, is blue. But you'll see that from a user perspective, there's no difference. And this is what the monoclonal antibody core facility, they're taking in requests to create antibodies or create isotype testing, to do to develop new mAbs and things of that sort. So this is the entire application. If you have immunizations that you want the facility to do, things of that sort, this is for managing that entire process. And this also has the inventory. So once they have the antibodies created, they have an inventory so that users from anywhere in the institution can request the antibodies through here. This has billing so that it will do billing depending on the pricing and things of that sort. This is the cell inventory, so you see the users can see what kinds of cells are available and what they can do with those cells. This is the user portion. One of the things that's key that we've done with our internal development and that we do with EPAM for this is that we try as much as possible so that once we complete an application to not have to do administrative support for the users. So one of the things we do is that we allow them to add services anytime. So we create the application so that if this core facility decides that they're going to create some sort of new immunization type or things of that sort, they can add the service, they can add the price, it'll automatically appear for the user to see. It's all within the database. This is just another one of the things they do. Establish mAbs so that you can go and see it. The third application that we took on is more recent, and that's the Office of Sponsored Projects. And they have an application called Grand Central. And the need was that all of this, our researchers are going out and looking at all these fund sources, and they're bringing in monies, and they're getting grants. And how do you, from the administrators, how do they have a central view of all the PIs and all the researchers and how much money they're bringing in and what's due? You know, if they have a grant, when is it due for renewal, things of that sort? When are the reminders going out and approvals? And so this application, that's what it does. And it's a phase application, and we started with this on with phase one. This is fully developed. This full development life cycle is completely outsourced, and it's completely done offshore. Once we got comfortable during that first application, we having doing the development and doing all the work offshore, then we've continued doing it that way because it turns out to be a lot cheaper, of course. This is a grant and a time and material process, and you can see what the application does is all the proposals that are being submitted to funding agencies, the certifications, assurances, all the notices of award, keeping track of all of those things. It ties in with finance so that when a grant it's awarded, we can see the fund numbers associated with that fund, with that award, and it does reporting, it does notifications. Okay. And this is just, I blocked out certain things because of privacy and things of that sort. So I blocked out all the PI names. So it has all the PI's names, the sponsoring. This is just one view, the sponsoring agency, the project, the grant number, and what's the status of that proposal. And you can see the different views and things of that sort. It has reporting. This is one of the reportings where you can see the grant that has been awarded, what the status of the grant is, and things of that nature. So that was just to give you a view of what we've been doing. Those are the three applications that we developed, and we started this in 2005, and we're continuing with EPAM. We're very happy with the work they've done, so we're probably going to continue with them. But some of the things that you need to watch out for. when you're developing with people offshore. One of the things is the language barrier. All of these people in most of these countries, in Russia, they're all the developers, the project managers, they speak English, but they have accents. And it's not just that they have accents. My developers have very heavy accents, and my developers are having a hard time understanding them. They're having a hard time understanding the developers. So it's not just looking at what country am I dealing with and can they speak English, but can your developers understand them and vice versa. We have found that what I found is I've worked with a lot of people from a lot of countries, so I understand everybody, but I have two of my developers are from China, and sometimes they have a hard time understanding the guys in Russia. So just something to think about. Time zone differences. So your work hours may have to shift depending on where your offshore developers are. They're in China, you're 12 hours off. If they're in Russia, you have to figure out what is it, when are the times that the developers are going to, if you're going to have a conference call, what are the times that you're going to be able to have the conference call? Are you going to have to shift your schedule a little bit so that if you're going to have daily meetings, that you can have the daily meetings without people sacrificing their dinner times and things of that sort? So just something to think about. This is a big problem. Because the folks are offshore, you don't see them, you don't know them, you talk to them perhaps once in a while, but because of that, they can change the people on you very quickly and without you really knowing. So you've been working with the development team and you have five people on the team, all of a sudden, the code starts coming in with lots of bugs. What changed? Something happened, everything was going smooth, all of a sudden, the quality of the work that you're getting back is not up to par. And I'm saying this happened to us. And I'm saying something changed. Something happened. What's going on? Came to find out that they had changed two of the developers. The people that they brought in weren't as familiar with the project. They weren't as experienced. And there you go. I had lots of bugs. And I was being charged because this was on a time and material project. I was being charged for that. Well, no, I'm not going to pay for you to teach your developers. So you have to be very aware of that. Since that time, every contract that we sign, I make sure that I put in any time that they change the developers, that they change anybody on the team, I need to be notified. Depending on the kind of work that you're doing, and when we got to the monoclonal antibody application, they weren't familiar with the scientific terms. Explaining to somebody across, on the phone, in southern Russia what an aliquot was not an easy task. And just simple things that you don't think about, you have to explain. You may want, if most of the applications that you're developing are scientific applications, make sure that you get a development center that has expertise in developing scientific applications. I don't need that because I need various areas, so the team that I have is just fine. This is something, again, that I didn't think about, and this is that the error messages, the prompts that you get when your users see it may not be in U.S. English. You get certain things that they think translate and sound good to them, but it does, nobody understands what they're talking about. So you have to pay more attention to that than you would. Even if you give them the text, we give them the actual text that they're to use for error messages, for prompts. But because of their English is not that U.S. English, they don't type it correctly or they don't translate it quite correctly. So you have to watch out for that and spend more time just looking at all the prompts, error messages, et cetera. Something else is that some of the critical components that are part of my infrastructure, they don't have. They're not working in my premises, so do they have the same type of firewall that I have? They don't have the same IDS that I have. They don't have all of the components. Do they have Active Directory, which is the core of my infrastructure? They don't have any of those things. So you need to think about it, because when you get that application and you begin testing that application within your infrastructure, you may hit roadblocks and problems that they didn't face. So even though the code is fine, there are differences in the infrastructure. Why we started using it and why we continue to use offshore development. Of course, the biggest thing is price. You can get longer, a longer day. So my developers work 9 to 5. The developers in Russia are working 9 to 5. When they finish their development and they give us a build, we get the build overnight, we install it, we test it. By the time the Russian guys come back to start the day, the next day we're giving them feedback already. So it's sort of a way of extending your 24-hour day. The documentation is very thorough. My in-house developers are terrible at documenting anything at all. These people, because they're paid to do this, they are paid for their documentation, they're paid for all the pieces. They have to have a systematic process, and one of that is documentation. So my developers are actually learning from these guys, because now they're taking, oh my God, I have to write documentation every time I do something. Oh great, let me do it. So we're actually learning and applying some of the things that they're doing. They have vast knowledge, and they can pull resources at any time. So if this particular project needs somebody that's an expert on, you name it, whatever that X is, they have it somewhere in their staff, so they can pull someone, add them to the team, and voila, that knowledge is now available. That development team can grow and shrink. So they're developing an application for me, and I said, you know what, instead of giving me that new piece, that new module in 5 days, I need it in 3 days. So they can add a whole bunch of people to it at any given time and give it to me much quicker than I would ever have gotten it. And the same thing for shrinking, when I need to throttle down the student information system. It's been developed, it's ready, it's been in production for 2 years. So now it's just maintenance and little things that need to be tweaked. So then the development team is throttled down, it's shrunk, and now I have one or two people working on that only. You can take on a whole bunch of simultaneous projects. So from the outsider's point of view, it looks like I can handle 20 projects at any given time. Not 20, but I can handle a whole bunch of projects. In actuality, I only have 3 projects that I'm developing in-house right this very moment, with another 2 projects that are being developed offshore. Systematic methodology, they have a way of new builds as they come in, documenting the new builds, documenting the bugs that are being reported, things of that. It's just, they have a method to the madness. This is one key component, and that is a cost savings that's not calculated in the total price, but I can reuse a lot of the modules. One of the modules that I have that they developed for us first when they developed the student management system is a registration module. If you are a student and you want to fill out an application, you first have to register. You register, you get an account within within the system, and from that moment on, before you become an actual student in the school, as you're an applicant, you can go in and you can log in, see the status of your application, submit your letters, and whatever. So that was a great module. I have 2 other applications that needed something similar. I have a collaboration system that needed a registration process. And we immediately said, why don't we just take that code? We took the module, it's .NET, it's using SQL, it's using all of the other components that I use, so I can pick up that module wholesale and put it in my new application and reuse it. And we've done that with various parts of this. some of the lessons learned. At the very beginning of the project, you should have a shared calendar. This is key because the holidays in Russia or whatever country that you're dealing with is very different than our holidays. For instance, in the U.S., we have, for New Year's, we have one day off. That's January 1st. In Russia, you have, you know, your New Year's holiday tends to be 1 or 2 weeks, depending. They have little Christmas and big Christmas or something of that sort. So you have to make sure that you account for that and that you have a shared calendar from the beginning so that you don't expect something during that time period. The infrastructure may not be, is not as robust as our infrastructure here. We're used to going to, and this is, depends, because there are some countries that will have better infrastructure than we have, but it happens that in Saratov, it's not as good. So when there was a huge snowstorm last year, and the developers couldn't travel to the office, they couldn't get to the office, they didn't have a mechanism like I have from home to be able to work from home. So that meant that during that huge snowstorm, I had 3 or 4 days where the developers couldn't develop. So that those are things that you just need to account for. Determine at the very beginning the frequency in which you're going to get bills. They get to get billed happy, and every time they make a change and every time that they correct or fix a bug, they give you a new bill. Well, if every time you give me a new bill, I have to turn around and have staff in my organization here go ahead and put it up on the server and test it and load that new build. The next day they give me a new one. Oh, here we go again. Let's do the testing. Let's go through that. So you have to put together the frequency in which these things are going to be delivered, and unless you're in full production and it's a critical error, you don't need to put the build on right away. So you can schedule it. You don't need to do it so frequently. Ensure that you have a common view for your view track, your bug tracking. This is very, very important. We didn't have this at the beginning, and it was like, oh, so who said we had a bug, and how was it fixed, and was it tested, and was it not tested? Right now, we have a common view. We have a website that we can input all the bugs. We can report the bugs. You can track who recorded it, what module, all the information. The folks in Saratov can correct that problem, correct the bug, and they put the status as corrected. We have to verify with the next build that it is in fact corrected. They will also tell us what build it will be corrected in. And you have to ensure that you can support the application. These people, they're building the application for you. They're delivering their application. Who's going to support it going forward? Are you going to continue to employ them throughout? And they will do that. You can pay them, and they will continue to support the application. If you're going to take it in-house and support it going forward, you need to be prepared for that. The testing will need to be very thorough. That's with any application, but especially if it's offshore. At some point you're going to sign that check that says, okay, you've been paid, and they're going to go away. You're going to have to pay for support beyond that. So you need to make sure that you're being very, very thorough. And just because you are you're outsourcing this and you're giving it to some other company to do doesn't mean that you don't need staff in-house. You need staff in-house to understand the code so that they can support it going forward. You need people in-house to load the databases and the bills and all of the things that are related to putting it within your infrastructure. This is kind of hard to see, but this is the common view of our bug tracking. This is the dashboard that we use. This is the dashboard that we use so that you can see the summary of all the bugs, the status, the severity of the bug, when it was created, who it was assigned to within the team in Saratov, what build the fix is going to be on, et cetera, et cetera. And you can drill down to all of these and see more information.
These are the documents. As they're building the applications, they're building the documentation, so at any point you can go in and see the documentation. This is a report they give me. It looked nice, so I put it on there. But it's just the defects and how they're being tracked, the defects and how they're being corrected at what rate. And this is the project plan, so that you can look at any time. You can look at the team member that is working in a particular part of the project, how long it's going to take, et cetera, et cetera. This is our information. You can go to our website and take a look. EPAM, I put the EPAM website. This is the, if you want to look at the application for the graduate school, the student information system, you can see part of it, at least the application process, at that URL. And you have my email address, and those are the three developers that have been working on all of these various projects. Michael Val, which is the first one, he's the student information system. Da Song is the monoclonal antibody core facility. And Chin Zhang worked on the Grand Central, which is the Office of Sponsored Projects. Yes? Okay. Okay, the question is, what was the arrangement? Who owns the source code? Do we own it? Does the developer owns it? No, we own the source code. They are our hands, so to speak, and they build the source code, but we entirely own the source code. When they are complete, when they complete the development, they give it to us, and that's the end of their involvement. No, they don't have. So the question is, do they have rights to use this? Yes, to reuse the code. They don't have the rights to reuse our code. So the look and feel and all of that is all ours. But they do reuse modules. So and that's good practice anywhere. They reuse the modules. Even in our applications, they're using modules that they've created for other folks. And so that's the behind-the-scenes stuff that you see. Right. So the question is, did we really do our due diligence in finding an off-the-shelf product that would do it? You know, I don't know. I don't know. At the time, and this is always at the time, because, you know, now I go across to the vendor booth and I see all of this stuff. Well, at the time that we were looking for it, and this is key, at the time that we were looking for it, there wasn't anything out there that didn't require customization that would have cost us this or much more. So that's the difference. Thank you. Yes. Okay, so the question is, how do we deal with the infrastructure differences between their development offshore and our infrastructure? Two things that we did. One is that we told them, for instance, one of the differences was that they were using very low-end servers. So when they were doing their testing, they were doing the testing with a subset of users. So they were doing their load testing and all of that, let's say with 100 users. Well, we were going to have students going through the system, so we needed to have thousands, a simulation of thousands of people going through the system. So we talked to them and we said, you really need to build up your infrastructure a little bit and have a little bit more powerful server so that you can do the testing that we are doing. One of the second things was AD. We needed to make sure that the applications that they were building integrated with AD nicely, and they didn't have AD. So they put it an active, they added Active Directory servers so that they could simulate our environment. And there are some pieces that we cannot simulate. They couldn't have the same firewall that we have. They couldn't have the same intrusion detection system that we have.
So what we did for that is that we created an environment, a test environment for them, so that once they give us the build, we put it in our infrastructure, and then they can VPN into our infrastructure and do some of the testing. And they don't do the testing. We do the testing, and then we detect an error. And they say, well, we can't duplicate the error. So I said, okay, so dial in. So they come in through VPN, and they actually can reproduce the problem, and they can see the problem. Yes? So how would I, even I have the same number of pros and cons, so how do I rate my experience? My experience has been very positive thus far, and it's not actually my personal experience, it's the experience of my users. So for instance, with this Grand Central application, they came to me and they said, okay, we need this right away. We want to replace what we have. Whatever we're using doesn't work, doesn't exist. They had a new director that had come in. We need it immediately. I said, well, I can't, you know, I have a committee that decides for me what the priorities are. The committee said this takes priority. Okay, but I have three developers. They're working on three projects right this second. Which one of these three do you want me to drop? And they said, we don't want you to drop any of them. Okay, so what do I do? So what I said to them is, you know, one of the options is you can go with EPAM, with this offshore company that we've been using. We've had good experience, da-da-da-da-da. And they decided to go ahead and use it. Now, the woman that's in charge of the project, her name is Dana Carroll. And Dana has been selling EPAM much more than I ever do. She's the one raving about it. Oh, my God, they're so great. We just, and they started their application, I think, about 4 months ago. And now they're in beta. We could never have done that for them. So they're in beta. Right now, you go and you talk to Dana, and Dana thinks that EPAM is the best thing since sliced bread. So that's really who talks for me, so to speak. So they are having a really good experience. So the next time somebody needs, you know, I'm in that situation again, I will again, you know, recommend that they look at EPAM. And then I let them make the decision. This is, you know, I will walk them through the process. I will do the project management on my side. I will help, but it's really the end user and EPAM that are doing. I just do the connecting and some of the work in between, but it's really them that are working with each other. Right, so privacy and personal information and the developers, especially since you're offshore, having access to all of that in our, yes. What we have, what we do, and we do this whether the company is offshore or onshore, we have them sign a non-disclosure agreement. We have them sign a business, I forget what the legal term is, but we have them sign a couple of documents that deal with privacy and deal with the information being kept confidential. We also have our legal department. So we sign a contract with the vendor, and we have a legal department, and this is very important to have your legal department involved so that when they're looking through the project, when are you going to pay for this stuff? Let's say you have a fixed price project. When are you paying? When do you deem that a project is completed? When are you satisfied? So those are things that all have to be worked out on the contract. But we do have all those things in place, and we do have a number of companies that dial into our system that support our clinical applications and all of that, and they sign a similar document. Yes. Any other questions? Yes. It actually depends. With the student information system, I had one full-time developer working with them for I think about a probably about a third of his time, or no, actually more. About three quarters of his time, that was the 60,000 I put down. About three quarters of his time was used with this application. But I'll have something like the sponsored project application, where I have very, very little involvement in what I'm doing. Is in, the developer that I have is using very little time. I would say probably less than 5%, because what he's doing is loading bills and creating the database and things of that sort. So it's very little. So it really depends on the kind of project that you're doing, the size of the project. The student information system was a huge project, and not only was it huge, but like I said, it was the dean did not have a clear picture of what they wanted, so we needed to have more involvement. So it's going to depend. Okay, anything else?
Your administration came to me and said, we'll make a few new programs in house developers. What would you be putting out here for our house? It was not a question here. Which one did you want?
Okay, so I actually came across that. So if my administration came and said, do you have two new developers, or we can give you the equivalent money to use to use EPAM. I came across this this year, so I'm going to get actually two new developers next year. So that's my choice, to have the developers in-house. So I would develop having the people in-house, and I will continue to use EPAM for the overflow. So I will continue to have, because the reason they're giving me the two developers is because they want me to take on developing 30 applications for core facilities. So I have to create a core facility framework with 30 for 30 different cores. So it's going to really take two full-time developers going on forever to support that. So the second that the developers come in, they already have a full plate. So if anything else comes above and beyond that, I will still have to resort to EPAM or some other company like that. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. But we do have all those things in place, and we do have a number of companies that dial into our system that support our clinical applications and all of that, and they sign a similar document. Yes. Any other questions? Yes.
You mentioned that your developers work with theirs. So, and I know it's a very good project, but any kind of ratio of percentage you can give us as far as how much of your developer time is affecting that 3 or 4 developers across the
country? It actually depends. With the student information system, I had one full-time developer working with them about three quarters of his time. That was the 60,000 I put down. About three quarters of his time was used with this application. But I'll have something like the sponsored project application, where I have very, very little involvement in what I'm doing. Is in, the developer that I have is using very little time. I would say probably less than 5%, because what he's doing is loading bills and creating the database and things of that sort. So it's very little. So it really depends on the kind of project that you're doing, the size of the project. The student information system was a huge project, and not only was it huge, but like I said, it was the dean did not have a clear picture of what they wanted, so we needed to have more involvement. So it's going to depend. Okay, anything else?
Your administration came to me and said, we'll make a few new programs in house developers. What would you be putting out here for our house?
It was not a question here. Okay, so I actually came across that. So if my administration came and said, do have two new developers, or we can give you the equivalent money to use to use EPAM. I came across this this year, so I'm going to get actually two new developers next year. So that's my choice, to have the developers in-house. So I would develop having the people in-house, and I will continue to use EPAM for the overflow. So I will continue to have, because the reason they're giving me the two developers is because they want me to take on developing 30 applications for core facilities. So I have to create a core facility framework with 30 different cores. So it's going to really take two full-time developers going on forever to support that. So the second that the developers come in, they already have a full plate. So if anything else comes above and beyond that, I will still have to resort to EPAM or some other company like that. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Stream multi-format audio and video to PCs and mobile devices with Helix Server from Real. Information at realnetworks.com.